Spectacular Diagnostics.
Hello and welcome to another new cycling season. It is 2024. It is the Australian Road Race, and I'm delighted to be joined by Chris Harper of Team Jayco Alula. Chris, thanks for coming on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm going great. Thanks. Thank you very much for having me on.
So you kicked off yesterday with the time trial. You finished second, which was a decent result behind your teammate Plapp. How was it for you? Was it a race of pain as usual?
Yeah, pretty stock standard with the TT. Nothing to say other than it was suffering from start to finish. But I think great start for us. We went 1-4. So yeah, good start to the year for us. And I've just got back from watching Caleb win the Criterium. So yeah, everything's going good.
Yeah, it was a good race again. Nice to see Caleb back in the home colours.
Yeah. Yeah, good to see him back in the team and absolutely flying as well. He looked very fast in the finish there.
Now, this time of year, we're always, especially in this side of the world, we're always speculating about who's in form, who's coming in with the target of winning the road race. You obviously, the team have strengthened. They've signed current champion Luke Plapp. So you come in with eight men. Yourself, Plapp, Caleb Ewan, Lucas Hamilton, four incredibly strong guys. Kyle O'Brien, who went close a couple of years ago. So obviously the team starts with, you know, expectation of winning. How do you think you'll go about doing that? What type of race do you think we're going to get this time?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the pressure of the race, I think, is always put onto us because, like you said, we do have a strong team. And you know, Plappy's won it the last 2 years in a row, so he's also got a bit of a target on his back. But also, I think he can be confident in how he's going, given what he did in the TT, and also just the confidence from winning it twice in a row. He obviously knows how to win this bike race. So I think for us, it's just, you know, not a matter of who wins the bike race. It's just, as long as it's one of us, we're going to be happy. And just always sort of being in a position that we can win the race, I think, is the most important thing. It's easy at nationals to get caught out and then have to fix something. And I think, we're always probably prefer to be on the front foot rather than trying to fix things.
Last year, it looked to be going quite well. The race seemed to be in control. And then all of a sudden, in the last, I think it was the last 2K, Plapp managed to kick on and drop Michael Matthews. What do you remember of last year's race?
Yeah, I think last year we probably got a little bit out of control, especially in the start of the race. We maybe didn't set ourselves up quite as well as we would have liked. And from memory, I think we ended up riding for quite a bit of the race with a couple guys. I think Heppy from memory and Rudy Porter, which wasn't really the plan. We were a bit unlucky as well. Callum Scottson was going really well, but he crashed and had to change bikes. So that was one rider down sort of thing. Like you said, just in the final there, it all sort of looked really good for Bling until Plappy made his move. And then, you know, again, as soon as someone's up the road, everyone sort of looks to us to fix it. And obviously Bling being so fast as well, he sort of got lent on to fix Plappy and couldn't do it. And that was the race over for us.
And the big news about this year, I suppose, is the potential weather. So we're used to it being roasting hot and that having a significant impact on the race. It helps to really make it selective. This year, it looks, if current forecast can be believed, we're going to get rain. It's going to be, relatively cold. It's still not cold. It's still 20 degrees, 24 degrees. And it's going to be a little bit windy as well. I don't remember the last time there was a rainy Australian road race. Do you?
Not as wet as what they're predicting. I think a couple of years ago, I remember maybe my second year on Yumbo, it wasn't a very nice day. It was sort of overcast and drizzling a little bit. And the start of the race was actually quite cool, but never the amount of rain that they're forecasting. I think I just got back from the crit and someone said they're forecasting like 20 to 40 mil, which is obviously quite a bit of rain. So I definitely can never remember nationals like that.
And that adds a totally different kind of element to the race. The heat usually makes it selective, but equally rain can also make a race very selective too. Do you think it's going to have like a big impact, especially if it is, you know, the 20 to 40 mil like they're talking about?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, if it is that wet, then, you know, it is probably going to make a lot of guys nervous for sure. And maybe, you know, change people's tactics a little bit. Maybe some guys want to get out of the bunch and out of the mess sort of thing. I mean, obviously, going through on the lap, going through the Fed Uni there, there's quite a bit of turning. And yeah, it's maybe not the nicest, or potentially could be not so nice. I remember a few years back, you know, if a team gets on the front through the uni and actually makes it hard, it's completely strung out and it's hard out of the corners as well. So if it is wet and someone decides to make it hard through there, it's just an extra bit of the lap that's hard.
Yeah, because normally it's usually about the climb of Buninyong, and then you've got mainly descending back in. As you mentioned, there's a couple of tricky corners. Durbridge crashed a couple of years ago on one of those ones.
Yeah.
In terms of the climb, obviously it's a climb everybody knows really, really well. You've got the main road section coming up and then we turn left. Now, the big news this year is that there's going to be quite a strong headwind once you turn left. It's almost going to be block headwind all the way to the KOM point. And we're talking about, depends on which weather set you use, but you're looking at between 20 to 30 kilometers per hour, which would be hugely significant and a big help for those who don't want to attack on the climb. What do you think is going to happen with the wind this year? Do you feel it a lot when you're in that section?
Yeah, quite a lot, actually. I'd say the wind on this climb plays a massive impact, especially, you know, I like to always think of the climb as having two sections. Obviously, it kicks up a bit at the start there, and then even before you turn left, you're actually getting quite a good sit on the wheel. And then you turn left, you actually go downhill for a little bit. And then it's not till you take that right-hand bend where you start to climb up. But even then, for the next few hundred meters, it's actually quite good on the wheel. And it's just that last little kick over Buninyong that's actually pretty steep. So I'd say the wind plays a big impact on this climb. And we've probably seen it in the past as well from memory. One other time there was quite a solid headwind on the climb. I actually think Caleb got around quite well and he was sprinting for second, I believe.
Yeah, thank you. Is that the year he lost to Hausler in the sprint? Or was that another year?
Yeah, might have been another year. Well, it could have been that year, actually. Yeah, you might be right.
We don't often see, I mean, previous years, the wind hasn't played such a big role. Conditions have been pretty calm or it's not been a headwind. So it's been quite a long time since we've talked about, one, kind of poor conditions in terms of rain, two, a headwind. So it feels like almost like a totally different race compared to previous years.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think if it's that strong a headwind and we're all feeling it, you know, I mean, it's already, I'd say for a pure climber, it's already bloody hard to get away on that climb solo. Not many guys have been able to make a big difference. Is quite difficult. I mean, you know, we've Richie Port's come here and race nationals, and even he's not been able to get guys off his back wheel. And you know, 2 weeks later, you see what the guy does to everyone on Wollunga Hill. It's if he can't do it, then I'm not sure who can.
Yeah, definitely. But I suppose the team have the ideal squad with them in that there's a couple of guys who can attack if conditions aren't as bad as this. So yourself, Plapp, maybe Lucas Hamilton, and then you've got Caleb, if it comes together for any type of sprint. So you've kind of got most bases covered.
Yeah.
As a team, if you're looking at your rivals, obviously DSM come in with three riders, Chris Hamilton and Matt Dinham, two strong riders who have gone well here in the past. Q36.5 come in with three riders, two of whom potential kind of candidates for the win, and James Whelan and Damien Housen. Michael Storer's in, but as you've mentioned, and I was going to say, really hard for a pure climber to win this race. Who do you think would be your biggest rivals?
Yeah, I think you probably nailed it on the head there. I think when you look at it on paper, they're probably the two. Well, they've got the numbers Q36.5 and DSM. Yeah, they've obviously got the numbers, and like you said, both Damo and Whelan are definitely capable of winning on this course, and they're normally always in good shape this time of the year. And even Cyrus, I mean, he's been the under 23 champion on this course. So, you know, things go well and everyone starts looking at each other, there's also potential to slip away. And yeah, if everyone, I think it's easy on this course to look at the profile and fixate on the climb, but actually in the last few years, sometimes, you know, the winning move's gone away, or it's the race has been won, typically not on the climb. So it's definitely the factor that makes everyone fatigued, but yeah, the difference is normally made somewhere else on the course.
And Whelan, I've been checking out his training. So he, since mid-October, he's been doing at least 500 Ks every week. Before Christmas, the 2 weeks running up to Christmas, I think he did 1,000 Ks both weeks before Christmas. So it seems like he's interested in starting the season pretty hot. And he's got his new contract coming back to Europe. So I think most people will be looking towards Whelan as the main sort of rival, I think, to your team.
Yeah. I mean, he always is, you know, someone to look out for around this course. He's this time of the year, he's always in good shape. Like you said, he likes to put in a good bit of work over the Christmas period. So he's always in good shape. And yeah, like all of us, I guess he'd enjoy being in the national champions jersey. So he's definitely one to look out for.
In terms of break selection, it's been a long time since the winning break has actually won. I mean, Kane Richards last year was phenomenal, surviving from that morning break and challenging for the win. You obviously are the biggest team. You've got eight riders. Is it a case of, if it's a big break, we want two in it? If it's a small break, we can let it go? What's the normal sort of kind of way the team approaches things, certainly last year when you were riding for them?
Yeah, I think normally if there's a big break, I think it's always good to have numbers in there. I mean, I wouldn't say we want to have a big break and then, you know, just have one rider in there and bank on that sort of thing. Especially this year, I mean, probably in the past, there's also been some continental teams that have had quite a lot of numbers in the elite. Like a team like Bridgelane has previously had good numbers in the race, whereas I think this year they're quite a young squad. I think they've only maybe got three elite riders. So, you know, there's probably not a lot of teams that are going to fix something, if that makes sense. I can't really see anyone being too keen to jump on the front and ride for five laps to fix the break of the day or something like that.
Yeah, because even before, I think we had EF and was it Drapac who used to kind of join together?
Yeah, a few years ago you had, I mean, they were called Avanti and they always had a big roster. Drapac always had a big roster, and then a couple other continental teams, Budget Forklifts and all that. So there was normally, you know, three sort of teams outside of this team that actually had numbers. Whereas this year, I think, like you said, it's, you know, other than us, there's Q36.5 and DSM that have some numbers. But yeah, no one else has got a massive squad, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think the key thing for both those teams is they've only got three, but
Yeah.
two guys are probably co-leaders, at least for the first half of the race. So really, they've only got one
Yeah.
domestic each. So the big
Yeah.
weight goes away. It's just really hard to ride as a one rider and bring things back.
Yeah, for sure. And like yeah, I guess as well, you know, even if you do have numbers, it's, you know, do you really, really want to get on the front and give everyone else a free ride sort of in the race as well? It's I think that's what makes nationals quite tricky sometimes.
And we've seen before, like the team aren't shy in chasing down the break, even if it contains riders. I mean, it's a race, I suppose you've got to be really honest about your legs. And if you are up front, you've got to be honest and say, I'm not winning today. And then the boys from behind can start chasing. And it never ceases to amaze me how fast the gap can tumble on a
Yeah.
lap. I mean, we've seen before kind of 6 minutes disappear. And
Yeah.
what seems like one lap. It's almost insane that the difference that a chasing bunch can make.
Yeah, for sure. I think if you sort of explode on this course, it's you're pretty quickly going backwards. You lose time so fast. So yeah, I mean, the team's never been afraid of taking it up and, you know, bringing something back or sending guys across. So I think, yeah, if you've got the numbers and you got strong guys that can do it, then it always helps.
And I suppose the only one I've not really mentioned is Simon Clark, who was second last year. It might be his last season in the pro ranks. He's not said anything yet. Another rider who, oh, unfortunately for him, he's a solo rider, but very, very high quality rider.
Yeah, for sure. And like you said at the start of the conversation, it's, you know, no one's really seen anyone race this time of the year. So we've all got a question mark of who's going well and who's not going well. So definitely it's a course that suits him quite well, I'd say. So if he is in shape, then he'll be definitely be one to watch out for.
And I suppose we, over this side of the world, we often have a little list of riders who go well in the rain. I don't
Yeah.
normally have too many Australians on that list.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing I'm not on that list.
So I'll see. I mean, as we say, the forecasters are predicting a storm. These things can be very hard to actually get right. So it could end up just being showers and a little bit of wind, and therefore it won't be as selective as maybe it could be. If the heavens open, it's going to be a bloodbath, I would imagine. Right, moving away from the road race, let's look back at your season 2023. For me, I don't know about you personally, for me, I think your best season in the pro ranks, riding extremely well for Simon Yates in a lot of big races. So, you know, I've been looking back, Paris-Nice. You were right up there riding for Simon incredibly well. Tour de France is the one that sticks out for me the most. You were there riding as domestique when most other teams didn't have anybody left, which must have been really pleasing for yourself. And then rounding it off in Lombardia, what's that climb called? Ganda, when Roglic had been dropped, you're on the front nailing it again for Simon, pushing the pace on. How did you feel last season was for you?
Yeah, really good actually. I mean, for the most part, I enjoyed the season. I had a bit of a rocky start to the year. I'm breaking my collarbone at Down Under, so I missed a bit of racing in Australia. And then I sort of started to get a bit of momentum at Paris-Nice, and then last day didn't feel my best, and the next day tested positive for COVID. So that threw a bit of a spanner in the works. And after that, I actually had a bit of a rough couple months where I just sort of kept getting crook a bit. So that was tough. And then got on top of that, and I had a good lead into the Tour de France, had a good hard race at the Dauphiné, and then sort of everything clicked and didn't have too much trouble going into the Tour. And yeah, I was pretty lucky the whole race in terms of crashes and all that. And yeah, I think I'm quite happy with my performance, and I think team from what I gather is happy with how it went as well. So, yeah, the tour was great. I think it's one of those ones every bike rider wants to do. So, it was nice to, nice to make it to the finish. And also, I feel like I at some points had an impact on the race. Well, I hope anyway. I don't know. And then, the finish of the year I was happy with as well. Like, I've never really considered myself being very good at one-day races, but I think I found a good balance of going into one-day races. And I was happy with how I finished my season there at Lombardia. I think I had another pretty decent ride there. So as a whole, I think it's been I think last season was pretty good. Yeah.
So it was your first Tour de France. Obviously, you're not a junior anymore, so it's taken a while to reach that level.
Yeah.
Was it everything you thought it was going to be?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's the Tour, so I think the most noticeable thing is just the difference in media and how many fans are at the start and finish. One thing I was surprised about is sort of when you're on the climbs and you're actually doing it, you sometimes don't realize how busy it is. And then if you go back and watch the highlights or something, you're like, oh, there's, I think I went back and watched the day that we went through Thibaut Pinot's region, and I was watching the climb there and I was like, I don't remember any of this. I mean, I was suffering in the box up that climb, so it probably makes sense that I don't remember, but I remember looking on TV and being like, this is incredible. There's so many people out. So yeah, I definitely lived up to the hype. I absolutely hated the Champs-Élysées, made me never want to do a cobbled classic. So so yeah, once I got to the finish and that out the way, it was awesome.
And this year, a relatively similar route, I would imagine. You've got nationals, you've got Tour Down Under. I've had a little look at the route, so no corkscrew this year. Willunga's back, and they've kept the Mount Lofty stage as well. Your team's arriving with Simon Yates, who was very close last year, and potentially could be the first non-Southern Hemisphere winner since a long time ago. What do you think of the route this year with no corkscrew and keeping the Lofty stage?
Yeah, I think it's I think in terms of how Down Under is, it's probably pretty similar in terms of the overall, like what sort of rider can win it. You could have a rider who's going to get up Willunga and not lose too much time, but can also take bonus seconds throughout the race. Like, I'm thinking back to, when Darryl Impey was winning it, taking bonus seconds and limiting his losses on Willunga Hill. But at the same time, I think with Willunga there, obviously it's a climb that is good for Simon. And also we've seen what Richie can do to people on Willunga. It's probably another climb like Nationals where the wind does have a big impact. If it's the wrong wind up there, it can be pretty frustrating. And also I think it opens up the race a bit, having the Lofty stage the last day as well, especially coming off Willunga the day before. Just see how people's legs are, and obviously it's a tough finish up to Mount Lofty, and it could be you could be fighting out the GC in the bonus seconds for the sprint up Lofty, I guess.
And then is it off to UAE Tour after that, or is it something different this year?
No, I'll stick around in Australia for a week, and I'll do Cadells the following weekend, and then I'll head back to Europe. And my first race back there will be Paris-Nice.
And definitely no cobbled classics.
Definitely no cobbled classics.
Well, Chris, I hope you enjoy Sunday's race. I hope it doesn't rain too much for you and your fellow Australians over there. But best of luck for the race and best of luck for the season ahead.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Spectacular diagnostics. Ooh. Hey, yo.
don't kumite, accumulate pace. First razor blade for the gate, we're moving weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might lead your mind strain. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the route, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves on, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fellatio from lazy do fall to ball cane. But brought a broad brain with it all game. You snow change, see through like a sonic grand, probably 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Knack Daddy. Oh, yeah. I feel like. Should be fossilized in amber. Wise commander, fuck all the lies and slanders. When it come to ill niggas, you sound like the standard. Feathers and quillers, I write the standards. Cobra, cuanto tu me cobra. Tengo dinero, pero no me sobra. You want the flake of the boulder, then I'm introducing the baking soda. Into the Yoda Palace, it's a golden, so blowing hate in circles in Minnesota. Buffaloes in their barrio. Drama with Disco King Mario. Shotty blow in the hands of the Sicario. I reload the pill off without watching his body fall. Porky ass and the mighty gone. Rainbow headband, Sylvester Stallone. Skull and bone, herringbone, wishbone. Went out for the trophy and brought the shit home. Blowing loud Indo. Chop the rock to 16-bit Super Nintendo. The cream rises in a crescendo, nigga. Well, now your daddy kicking at. You know what I mean? Jump off the motherfucking cliff live out the district. Shit, my nigga. Word. Woo.